Hi, Steve. Welcome. Today I'm joined by Emmett Peppers from Good Soil Management, and we're going to be talking about Tesla, what's going on with the stock, the company. We're going to give some ideas for 2022, also talk about some other stocks. Emmett, welcome back on the show. How have you been?
Good, Dave. You've been on a roll lately. Lots of great interviews, and we're in for some more stock therapy, it sounds like, tonight.
Exactly. It's been a roller coaster. It's like crazy. I mean, You have these record delivery numbers that come out that blow people away, and then the stock, you know, gaps up. We have the biggest one day, you know, gain ever in Tesla, and then the market just I don't know.
Well, really, it's funny. It's just really the growth in tech stocks that are capitulating. You know, it's like its own, you know, it's like two different stock markets almost. You know, there's the stock market that, like, you know, most regular people are aware of, like the S&P 500, the Dow Jones, and the NASDAQ, you know, and then all of us, you know, people who follow you pretty much and me and, you know, what we are involved in are really growth, tech, disruptive, generational type stocks, Tesla as the top pick, obviously. But yeah, I mean, you know, within the Tesla Twitterverse, the other stocks I see people talk about, whether it's like Palantir or, you know, I talk about Roblox or whatever, you know, they're also disruptive growth tech stocks. And so, like, all the growth disruptive tech stocks is like a completely different stock market index almost from, you know, what the mainstream financial media talks about and what most of, you know, most people who watch their 401ks are probably concerned with. So that mainstream, you know, stock market hasn't done so bad. It's near record highs still. But
yeah, that's
but
true.
Our stocks are take these big hits sometimes when it just keeps happening. You know, we melt up and then we take a big hit when there's like a scare of, you know, inflation or rates going up again and so forth. It's been a roller coaster for us.
You know? Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's been crazy. Like today, so we're recording this on Wednesday night. But yeah, the Fed came out with their minutes and I was reading them over and they do seem a bit more hawkish than what was initially, I think, portrayed by Powell at his press conference. But they're going to be tightening, it seems like, their balance sheet. It seems like they're considering not raising interest rates as much over time because they think that just selling their assets might actually help kind of reduce inflation even more. But yeah, I think it's, I don't know. It's like, we've talked about this before, but it just seems like this is going to be a theme, you know, this year, especially the first half of the Fed's kind of messaging and what they do with interest rates and, you know, quantitative tightening, all this stuff. What are your thoughts on all this? Are you concerned at all with the markets, the volatility? Do you think growth stocks are going to recover? They'll be okay by the end of the year, or what's
I think
your
the
assessment?
Top growth stocks like Tesla, which is what we talk about the most, will do well in the long run or medium term. I think they'll at least kind of like be backstopped by very impressive earnings and growth and such. You know, even if they drop 20% or 30%, they'd recover quickly, I would think. A lot of folks play with the options. Tesla options are like, it's an incredible amount of options trading volume on the exchange. It's like more than, it's like 10 times more than the amount of Apple options trading volume is Tesla options. And a lot of people in our, you know, Twitterverse sphere get really gung-ho about call options on Tesla and the delivery beat. You know, on Monday, I think I saw a lot of people that were like minted Teslanaires who were not before on that one day. And then probably they lost it all the next day or two, you know, and I think the Tesla call options or the growth stock call options are a very risky business in this environment. Mm-hmm. You know, even if if you could buy a call option on the underlying business, right? If you could buy a call option on the actual underlying business, that would be a great bet on Tesla and these other growth tech disruptive stocks. But we're talking about call options on the actual stock that's supposed to reflect the underlying business, but doesn't often for a long time. You know, on a big enough timeline, it's connected. But for growth and tech and disruptive stocks that we talk about, the actual stock versus the underlying business can seem very disconnected for a while, especially in environments like this where interest rates are in the flux, kind of uncertain, you know. And so, it's really risky, the call options, even when the underlying business is so robust, like with Tesla. You just don't know how the actual stock is going to react in the medium or short term.
Yeah. Actually, I was going to bring up with you this whole dichotomy or distinction between the volatility of a stock price versus the volatility of a company or business. And it's like so easy to get them mixed up because humans are by nature very emotional and attached, you know, to their assets and the fluctuations of, you know, the stock price. So we think that, you know, the Fed changing rates, the stock price like jumping up or going down like half or, you know, we think the company is so volatile and risky. But if you look at the company itself, it's like nothing's happened. Nothing's changed. You know? It's, they're just going to work every day, delivering cars, making cars, you know, doing more innovation, et cetera. There isn't that volatility that shows up on the stock ticker. Rather, it's like quite stable, you know, and it's quite, you know, predictable. But I think it's easy to get tricked. Our emotions trick us where we're like, oh my gosh, like just the ticker itself, like every second it changes, you know, red, red, green, green, like, you know, 10 up, 10 down.
Yeah.
It's like, it does something to your mind. It feels like where it just feels so dangerous or risky or inherently like, you know, volatile, where the business itself, like you're saying, you know, it's like, it's just what it is. It's just stable.
Yeah. Yeah. And we feel pain like twice as there's been studies, right? And like, you feel like the pain of going down in the stock price movement twice as much as the euphoria you feel when you're going up, you know, so yeah, it felt good Monday when it went up $140, you know, that felt great, but it going down, you know, 70, $60 today and $50 yesterday, you know, those 2 days combined probably feels worse for most people than the one day of up, even though we're, our stock price, the Tesla stock price is higher than it was on the, at the close on Friday last week.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think the close of Friday was 10.56 and right now we're at 10.88. So we're still like 30 points higher than Friday, but it doesn't seem like that. It feels it feels like we're way lower.
Yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't feel like that. But all the other growth and tech stocks have been hit so hard and Tesla's still $30 up from where it was on Friday. So, you know, that's the silver lining in a way.
Yeah. Do you ever get people calling you, like your family or friends? You're like, oh my gosh, Emmett, like what's going on with Tesla? It's like so crazy.
Yeah, I do. I get a lot of people calling me, you texted me, and I'm sure you get that too, right? I mean, you were like, what's going on with Tesla? Should I sell? And I'm like, no, don't sell. I get it every like time Tesla drops like 5% or something. And I just have to just say, no, don't sell.
You know? Exactly. Yeah.
But you probably get it too. I've just given up on trying to explain things because some people you just need, they just want to be told what to do. And, you know, I don't like telling people what to do, but friends and family, you know, I don't mind, you know, if they've come along the journey this far with me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I have a family member who got in pretty early and then sold half like a couple of years ago, still riding it out with a decent amount. Not like maybe like it's like a quarter of his net worth or so, but, occasionally, you know, he'll call me. Today he called me and he's like, Dave, oh my gosh, Tesla is so volatile. I can't handle it. You know, it's like, and sometimes he'll just call and say, I got to get out. This is too crazy. You know, like what's going on? And I kind of have to calm him down and say, hey, you know, this is what's going on, you know, like with, I know today I was like saying, yeah, you don't want to sell right now. This is the craziest year ever. You know, Tesla's going to like deliver crazy amounts of cars with Austin and Berlin ramping, and their profitability is just scaling up right now. And I was telling him what the 40,000 extra deliveries means, you know, for this earnings, and how the other thing is, like, I've been thinking about this concept. I mean, you're bringing it up more. It seems like this idea of, you know, Tesla, the stock of all time, the most valuable company in the world eventually. And, you know, we were thinking like, oh, maybe, you know, the second half of this decade. But then it seems like the way Tesla is executing, it feels like, you know, it's just being pulled up a lot to the point where there is a scenario where, you know, I think in a few years it's even possible. But this is like, it's crazy. It's the idea I had was there are some times when a company, when they bet on like execution or disruptive technology and innovation and they nail it, they start this flywheel. It actually goes way better than expected. It's just like, there's this rare case where it just like snowballs into something that no one thought, even maybe the founder or the CEO maybe doesn't even think it's, you know, going to be this big or this quickly, right? Successful. But I think there are some cases that happens like that. And it feels like Tesla's starting to enter into this strange era or period where it's like, it's actually, you know, the flywheel, the snowball is just growing fast. Yeah, I would love to know your thoughts on, you know, what you think about this. Where does this take Tesla?
Yeah. So it's, you know, the supply and demand of buyers and sellers at given prices are what creates the stock price, right, at the fundamental level. So as more and more people are less willing to sell before Tesla is the biggest company, you know, of all time in terms of market cap, right? So the more people that start realizing that Tesla does have the potential to be the biggest company of all time, which I think we're slowly more and more people starting to see that within our Twitterverse. It's almost a common theme now, whereas a few years ago, it seemed almost impossible. Only a few people might have thought of that, right? But then it kind of – it's like a good mind virus, right? Then it kind of explodes beyond – the Tesla Twitterverse. Then you have CNBC or Bloomberg News or, you know, your mom and dad, you know, grandparents who don't know much thinking like, hey, Tesla could be the biggest company of all time, you know. And once you kind of get that mindset out there, then you have fewer and fewer sellers, I think, of Tesla stock before the market cap reaches the largest company, right? And so as that kind of mindset gets out there, then I think that's when the rise in the Tesla stock price is inevitable to be the largest company in the world. But it might take some more time before that happens. But you know, right now there's probably enough sellers at 1.5 trillion or 2 trillion, obviously, where you'd take an enormous amount of buying to get it over there. Right. But at some point there will be more and more people, especially institutional portfolio managers, who buy into that idea that say, I'm holding this, you know, I'm not selling this at any price anytime soon, you know? Yeah. So that's my thought.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think a couple of the key things I think that will determine or impact Tesla's trajectory there is like how fast can they grow margins and revenue? We know they're, you know, shipping cars like at least 50%, maybe even 80 or 90% like this past year. But like, can Tesla increase their margins from like, let's say 30%, let's say without even regulatory credits, can it even go up to 40%? And if they can do 40% within, let's say 18 months, and they could continue to, let's say they do another 80, 90% growth, you know, for this year, like that margin, I think, impact is going to radically change the story completely for everyone. And the analysts will just be like, blown away, because no analyst is predicting 40%, you know, yes, in the next few years.
I think, or even like probably ever. Creating like, hey, this is the iPhone, but instead of a $1,000 device, it's a $50,000 machine, kind of computer. Yeah. You know, so I think that could be a story that kind of people understand and gravitate towards, because you're right, the 40% margins, that's incredible. I mean, Apple has something like that, right? I don't know what Apple's margins are offhand, but I think it's, you know, 40% plus. But once you start getting into that range, you're right, it's like a whole different ballgame, and people will start thinking very, very differently.
Yeah. Like one of the issues like about margins is this whole demand. Like, so the new and used car market is so crazy right now, where I went to a few car dealers this past week to shop for like a new car, and like they literally have like only 10% of the stock, like everything's sold out, and pretty much, and you have to like order it like a few months in advance. And I'm wondering, like, part of the demand for Teslas and the price increases have been the whole market. There's just not enough cars for people, right? So Tesla's jacking up their prices. They're getting higher margins as a result. So the bear case is, you know, the new and used car markets, they start to, you know, go back to the mean, chip shortages, you know, get alleviated, prices come down, and then there's less demand for cars, and that impacts Tesla. Tesla needs to lower their prices, their margins get hit a bit. Kind of like their euphoria ends, you know, with these kind of tailwinds. They don't have the pricing kind of advantage anymore, like this easy kind of, you know, high prices. But the flip side is there's another angle, which is there's a bull case. And I'm not kind of decided yet on which case is really going to happen. I think it's a wait and tell situation, but the bull case is, no, the demand doesn't go down, even if prices come down. So let's say you know, chip shortage abates, prices come down for new and used cars, but demand for Teslas don't really come down. But something happened in this whole crisis where the mindset of people changed. And there was an inflection point where people have started to realize Teslas are just way better and they're willing to pay a premium. And maybe the prices don't come down, or maybe they come down a bit, but that's offset by the increased efficiencies with Austin and Berlin. Also, you got, like, say, a higher FSD take rate possibility. But those things are stronger forces than maybe a slight softening of price. So you have this robust demand that allows Tesla to continue to increase their margins, right? And the exuberance actually not just continues, but it just gets, like, goes, you know, through the roof,
yeah,
because margins are just, like, continuing to increase. And what are your thoughts?
No, I agree 100%. I think I lean heavily towards the bull case. I think the bear case is certainly a possible scenario. I would give it a much lower probability than the bull case you just mentioned. And we have to wait and see to see how it plays out. And we can change our probabilities as time goes on, depending on various data points. But I think the bull case you just laid out makes total sense to me. And the big thing is that makes it highly probable is the development of full self-driving. So as this year goes on and it becomes, you know, more feature rich or more reliable and everyone starts wanting it more, you know, this is an assumption I have that full self-driving is going to be, you know, level 4 by the end of this year, based on what Elon said. Like, I don't think he's joking or he's saying one more year again. I think he's got a lot more data, a lot more input, and he's being honest and genuine. And he thinks, and you know, this year it'll be level 4, where that means, I think, you just, like, sit, you have to sit in the car, but you know, it can do everything for you. You know, you still sit in the driver, and that'll be a law anyway. You're not going to be, they're not going to let you not sit in the Tesla even for a while after it's ready to drive without someone sitting there. So I think once you have all kinds of Uber drivers, Lyft drivers, you know, all the, you know, delivery drivers, even just, you know, soccer moms and people just driving places, they once they realize, like, hey, I can just get in my car and, like, let it do its thing and be on my phone or listen to my podcasts or whatever. I don't have to even think about driving, really. I just have to watch the road just to make sure there's no crazy emergency vehicle, but I'm not even paying attention, really. Then I think everyone's going to want it. You know, like, people want that. They want that that mind, you know, focus to be able to do what they want. They don't want to have to focus on the road and making the left turn and the right turn. And sure, in the first month or two, it's nerve-wracking, you know, just like the first time I used autopilot, it's nerve-wracking. But I think once people use it, when it works well, after a month or two, they'll be very comfortable with it quickly. I think that's going to really drive demand and margins. So that'll be really cool to see when that pans out more.
Yeah. What's interesting is a lot of the expectations, I think, for Tesla, generally speaking, is that the demand will kind of keep in pace with production over time, you know? And so that's the idea, but then that's not how it really works out all the time. It's like, sometimes demand is lower, sometimes it could be higher. Yeah, but there also could be a time where it inflects, where it's just demand just, like, spikes up.
Like the S curve here just suddenly goes real up fast. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, Tesla can adjust that demand by pricing, you know, and charging higher or lower. But it's going to be interesting. The demand story. The other thing I'm thinking about is this idea that Zach Kirkhorn is just, I mean, obviously he's played an amazingly crucial role. But I think what's understated is how much of his conservative kind of guidance has helped, I think, Tesla. Because he's, like, been so disciplined, saying that, hey, 50%, you know, that's our guidance long term. We won't even talk about, you know, next quarter deliveries, next year deliveries. Yeah. Like, and by doing that, people have forgotten. The analysts don't ask anymore, you know, like, well, how many are you gonna, like, before, like, 3 or 4 years ago, everyone was like, okay, what are you going to deliver next quarter? You know, can you deliver, you know, this amount, you know, next 2 quarters, like, next year? Yeah. Everything was so focused on that. But now he's completely changed the narrative where people don't even ask about deliveries anymore.
Yeah, in the past, Elon, depending on his mood, would either get frustrated and, like, throw the book down, you know, like, insult the analyst, or he'd actually try to answer them to the best of his ability, and it'd turn into some talk about, full self-driving being safer than human drivers or something. But, I agree. Zach's been a great translator for Wall Street analysts to the Tesla business. Yeah, I
And so here's the other thing about Zach is he's been really conservative on margins as well. Like he just doesn't really give, you know, detailed, like, oh, we're going to hit 20% operating margin. He says, oh, you know, we're mid-teens and we'll just kind of continue to try to improve that over time.
Yeah. But
like I did, you know, some rough calculations with the 308,000 deliveries. I'm getting like an 18% operating margin.
Wow.
This quarter. And wow. It's just this quarter, meaning if demand is strong, you know, and they can continue getting more efficient, I'm looking at operating margins at least 20% hitting this year sometime at some point. But I don't think anyone's talking about operating margins in the 20% or higher than 20%. Like no analyst out there is even like fathoming this, you know, operating margins like above 20%. But if that happens, that's the stuff that analysts and institutional investors eat up. Like, you know, the margin story, right?
Yeah.
Like this is what speaks to them. And if Tesla can reach this, this is going to be a crazy year. Yeah.
I think a lot of the analysts that we're familiar with that are on TV and issue these reports that are publicly seen, you know, a lot of them have to placate their clients who are often calling them about Ford and GM and, you know, more and more are calling them about Tesla. So, you know, I think there's sort of a conflict of interest, you know, not a conflict of interest, but I just think there's some kind of bias towards giving Ford and GM and traditional auto too much credit because they're being asked to talk about those companies a lot probably in their line of work. And they can't just say all bad things about those companies. Those clients will stop calling them or stop giving them business. So they have to give like a balanced view. And, you know, so I think, you know, the Wall Street analysts are going to be for a long time behind on the Tesla story, even when the operating margins catch up. But you know, there will be some buy side, you know, analysts. Like buy side means like the actual hedge funds or institutional mutual funds that are investing in. There's analysts, they have that work, but they don't like publicly go out and talk about their findings, but they report to the portfolio manager of the billion-dollar hedge fund or whatnot. So I think those buy side analysts are more and more recognizing and don't have to kind of play that game. And those people obviously will understand it more, but we might not see it from, you know, the typical analysts we see on TV talking about Tesla so much,
yeah,
you know, except for Trip Chowdhury, maybe.
It's interesting because if they report 18, I have actually 18.4% estimated operating margin this quarter, but we'll see. If they do that, like this is before you have Austin and Berlin, which are next generation factories. This is before you have 4680, right, cells. And this is before you have like FSD really, you know, getting wide release and stuff. So there's a lot of stuff that could boost the operating margins above 20%. We'll see. I mean, this is like this is so interesting. I'm not, and that's the thing. I don't know. Like, I don't know for sure if it's going to work out to be over 20%. It just seems like there's a clear path as long as the demand is there for Tesla to continue strong pricing, you know, and kind of
seems like a clear path. The demand will stay there as long as their product is the best. And I don't see that changing anytime soon. I mean, for the next several years, I mean, you have all these product announcements, but you don't really ever see any product delivered any kind of mass quantity. Even the Rivian, I was driving home from San Diego and I stopped at a supercharger at Harris Ranch and there was a Rivian truck there I saw for the first time in person. I was like, whoa, I told my dad was driving with me. We stopped and it looked like the guy was sitting in there still. I thought I'd just get a quick look in the dashboard, but he was like, it looked like he'd been sitting there for a long time. And I was like, oh, let's just walk away. I don't want to like knock on this guy's door and like wake him up or anything. He might've been sleeping or something. And we went and we ate and had like a nice dinner for like an hour, like way longer than our car needed to charge. Then we got out and that Rivian was still there. And the guy was out like talking on his phone. So I don't know. I think there's anecdotally that could have been a problem with the Rivian. Why was it still? It looked like it had been there a while already. Why was it still there like an hour plus later? I mean, I just think there's probably a lot of problems with mass producing electric vehicles that Tesla has solved. But I don't know if any other company is going to solve it other than the Chinese EV EV makers. Yeah.
Yeah. What's your take on like the Ford F-150 electric and the electric Silverado, the trucks? Do you think they have a chance?
I just think they're dog and pony shows, to be honest. I think, you know, the product specs are great, right? But product spec and prototypes really mean nothing. I mean, you got to give, I guess you would assume there's some credibility to a legacy automaker that they know how to mass manufacture something. But I keep telling like friends of mine, like building EVs is completely different than building regular. They look the same, but they're completely different. It's like building refrigerators versus, you know, an oven or a computer, you know, like they might be a similar size or whatever, you know, they might both be in the kitchen, but they're completely different things, you know, and you need a completely different set of source material, like batteries, supply chain management. Like, where are they going to get the batteries from? You know, are they going to get more funky batteries from LG, like GM figured out with the Bolt? You know, like, you know, people give credit to Ford for this F-150, you know, like, oh, we announced we're doubling from, you know, 10,000 to 20,000. I think it was like, you know, 50,000 to 150,000 a year or something. But that's just an announcement. And they said like, oh, it'll be ready in a year or two. It's still an announcement. And I'm sure they're going to delay that even further. Like next year, it'll be like, oh, where's your now? Well, we delayed it another year because of battery. And then it'll come like 6 months later. By that time, it's way too late. And like, yeah, I don't see those companies doing much, to be honest. I would not put my money on those companies. But that's why their market cap is 1/10 or less of Tesla's, you know. Yeah. Right.
It just seems like, you know, whatever car that comes out, it's just, I feel kind of, I don't want to be too biased, but it just, I wouldn't want to go against Tesla, because that's the thing. What people don't realize, I think, is that Tesla will be in every major market segment in the auto industry. It's just a matter of time. Just because they're not in that segment right now, it doesn't mean that they're not going to release a car in that segment, right?
That's right.
And they're so people, coming. Yeah, people look like, oh, no, Tesla is like just doing big Cybertruck, that's it, right? No, if there's a market, like Tesla will release a smaller truck, you know, mid-sized truck. They'll do other stuff, you know, a van. They'll do many different, you know, types of things that they need to. But yeah, like I don't know how any manufacturer can make a car like as efficiently as Tesla. But also, like as you mentioned, the battery, and also just not just the supply of battery, but at the cost. And it's not just the battery cells. Tesla has been at it for almost a decade with battery pack technology, like assembly, automating that whole thing, which is a whole nother beast. You know,
all the software.
Yeah, I mean, what automaker out there is doing that? You know, maybe besides the Chinese, you know, EV automakers. And then you've got the whole FSD thing, where even if you have an EV, which is going to be hard for them to make, I think, efficiently, like that's still not like a real smart car that can't drive itself. So you're still stuck. You still lose. You know, it's like you work so still hard to make product. A great EV, and you bet your whole company, and you come up with something you think is like a great, but then it just isn't good enough because it's a dumb car, you know?
Yeah, it's like it's dumb and it's inferior in almost every way to a Tesla. Yeah, and it costs more to produce, probably, you know.
Yeah. It's just a sad, I don't know, I won't say sad, but it is sad in some ways, where it's just so hard to compete against a company that
you nailed it years ago, a slow motion train wreck, right? I mean, that's what it is. Slow motion train wreck for all the legacy automakers. You mentioned that in that blog, you know, what was that, 2011 or 12 in Tesla Motor Club's forums, I think you wrote up about it.
Yeah, maybe
I
just remember 2014 that line coming or so,
Yeah. And there was some other video circulating back then from some guy that worked at Tesla or used to work at Tesla. I can't remember, but it was like a 45-minute video going into all the details of why the legacy automakers will never be able to do what Tesla is doing. It has to be like another startup company. And now we're figuring out that other startup companies are too late and too far behind. And, you know, Tesla's just so far ahead that they're you know, I think their bet is made for them too. You know, their game is to raise capital on hype. But when it comes to mass production,
yeah,
big trouble.
Yeah, it just feels like the movie is playing out, and it's just like Tesla chomp chomp eat this market, chomp chomp eat this market, eat chomp chomp. It's like it's just, I don't know how you stop that, you know, that story from playing out.
I don't see either. Yeah. I mean, Tesla's not, I mean, the thing is also, I think people forget that you got Elon Musk at the helm of Tesla. We talk about this all the time. Elon Musk, the helm of Tesla, the greatest like engineer of our time, the greatest business magnate, according to Wikipedia, I guess. You know, he's really the greatest engineer, you know, of our time. And then you have all the skilled, you know, engineers he's recruited or that have been attracted to come to Tesla. It's been like the number one place to work from college graduates for years, you know. So they get their pick of the top engineers coming out of like the most prestigious engineering schools. And then, you know, all this talent goes to Tesla, and, you know, their autopilot, their self-driving team has some super smart people Elon's talking about. And I just think they're just so far ahead. There's no catching up. It's just, to me, it's a done deal that they're going to be the biggest company in the world. It's just a matter of time, whether it's 2 years or 8 years. I don't know, but that depends on when the business and stock kind of reconnect. You know, like they'll be disconnected, like we talked at the beginning. And yeah. Will they be disconnected where the stock is valued much higher than where the business is anytime soon? And if that's the case, maybe it'll be the biggest company by market cap in 2 years or 1 or 2 years from now. Or is the stock going to kind of languish for a while, like it did from 2013 to 2019? And in that case, I think it'll still be the largest company. It'll catch up eventually by the late 2020s, you know. So mm-hmm. It's just a matter of time. It's going to be the biggest company in the world by revenue by the end of this decade, and profit probably too. And then market cap is just a matter of time.
Yeah, definitely. I want to talk about this whole thing of stock price risk. So I'm curious to ask you, like, if this was Emmett maybe 5 or 10 years ago, do you think you would be as conservative as you are right now in terms of like, the options are risky? Or would you be like, what the heck? I'm all leaps, you know?
Yeah.
Let's say January 2024 or whatever. Do they have June 2024 already? I don't know.
I don't know. Definitely January 2024. I've looked at them.
Yeah.
Maybe March, I forget. But yeah, 10 years ago, I'd probably be doing if the thing is, Tesla's a $1 trillion market cap company now, you know, mm-hmm. and 10 years ago when Tesla ran up, you know, or 8 years ago when it ran up, to be a 30 or 40 or 50 billion dollar market cap company from 3 billion. You know, you got to look at the market cap. That's like the number one big misnomer I see with investors is, you know, they look at stock prices, but they don't reference market capitalization and total addressable market. So when it went from, you know, 3 or 4 billion market cap to 30 to 50 billion market cap pretty quickly, you know, that was a red flag. It went up 10x so quickly, right? But at the same, that is not going to go up 10x again, right? But at the same time, we understood how disruptive Tesla's business was, and that going from a 30 billion market cap to 300 billion market cap, you know, to be, you know, one of the top 10 biggest companies in the world at that time probably was 300 billion market cap in 2013 or 14. I have to look back to see what the top 10 biggest ones were, but I would imagine it would have been one of the top 10. But I could see that still. I could see that vision, you know, like, and I thought it would take a few years and it might be valued expensively like Amazon. So I did go heavy on options, you know, Tesla call, long-term call options. And I lost a lot of times, you know, and I got lucky rolling them over to a year forward. I always try to buy maximum time value. And, you know, whenever the next year's, you know, expiry would come out in January of the next 2 years out, I'd roll them over. I'd sell them and buy those and so forth. So I kept trying to do that, but I was losing money, you know, slowly but surely, until 2019, you know, it really turned around. So now that Tesla, if this was me again, going back there and Tesla already rose to be like the second or third or fourth biggest, whatever it is now, market cap company in the world already, I don't know if I'd go as heavy in the long-term call options because it's already one of the biggest companies in the world. Like to go, it could go 10x. It probably will, but you know, that's like the ceiling to me, you know, of possibilities 10x from here in the next several years, you know, that's the ceiling of like possibilities, you know, like I don't know if it would go 20x in 5 years or 8 years. I don't think that's really possible or realistic to think of, you know. So I don't know if I would go as heavy. I probably would fiddle with some, but I'd probably be more stock heavy and wait for it to come back down before I tried to rotate into long-term call options where it was like, you know, not one of the three biggest companies in the world. Maybe if it was like outside the top 10 or something, you know, I'm trying to compare it because I know it will be the biggest company in the world. So I'm just trying to have a reference to say, okay, when is it going to be the biggest company in a few years? And it's going to have to catch up to those. And that means it triples in stock price right now. Or if it goes down, it gets cut in half by 50%, then it would go up 6 or 7x to get to that biggest company. And that's a little more profitable to buy the call options. You know, that's kind of how I would think about it. Long explanation, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I've always had this kind of thought back in like 2013, in 14, I made like a 7-year kind of test TSLA price prediction kind of model. And I mapped out like what I thought quarterly earnings like deliveries could be for the next like 7 years.
Yeah, I think I remember that. And you had like a maximum, a minimum.
Yeah. Threshold.
I remember you put that together. I remember that was helpful. Yeah.
And so I had this kind of like mid-range and high range and super high range and then low range and super low range.
Yeah, I remember
and,
that.
The concept was kind of what you're talking about is, you know, you think that stocks follow this mid-range all the time, but that's not how it works because there are times of where it's human emotions too. Like the markets are not just objective, like they're reflections of the emotional aspect that humans put into decision making and also the nature of crowds and crowd psychology and all this, you know, other elements. And so there are times where, yeah, it goes the valuation and what people put into it, it goes beyond, let's say, that mid-range of what the numbers support, and it can go super high. And there are times where it can go like low and it can go super low, right? And if it's super low and you've got like a generational company that you think is just like going to be awesome, that's like, that's the ideal time, you know? The problem is with Tesla right now, with the S&P 500 inclusion, with it being one of the biggest, you know, companies and stocks out there, with having such name recognition, the idea is like, will it ever really get to that super low, you know, type of range?
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's like too discovered in a sense. So
then
it becomes, the question mark is, okay, like, are we in a mid range? Is that good enough to bet on options that maybe it'll stay there or go higher? And maybe the chances that it go low or super low are not that high. So, I mean, there's a lot of factors, but like, I think that's what, I agree with you. That's what makes options tricky is there's this ebb and flow of, you know, reacting one way and going the other way. And especially with growth stocks, you know, it's like, it's even more severe. Yeah.
And even it can stay what you feel is low for multiple years. You know, it doesn't mean like, it doesn't ebb and flow in that range, like quarter to quarter or even year to year. It can stay in the low range for, you know, 3, 4, 5 years before it kind of zips up like we saw in 2019, right? So like when you're buying those call options, even the long year, two year out ones, you know, you could lose all your money on that still, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. What's your strategy going into 2022? Like, are you adjusting your strategy at all from maybe, you know, how you were doing your fund in 2021? Yeah, what's kind of your game plan?
Well, I mean, I would say, you know, the lesson that's been imprinted on me that, you know, I don't know if I've learned it or not yet, but I'm trying to learn it, is that, you know, from 2021 especially, is always be ready for the always changing market environment, you know, and adapting to that, you know, just always try your best to adapt to it. And doesn't mean to react to every market headline, because you could easily overreact to everything thinking you're adapting to this or that, and you could lose a lot just over hedging yourself or whatever. But it means like trying to recognize when there's like a thematic change in the whole macro market, for example, or speculating on some risk that's not priced in yet, you know? And I did that well with COVID, for example, you know, 2 years ago, you know, it wasn't priced in. I speculated on it and it worked out, you know, great, you know? So if there's another big risk I could speculate on that hasn't, you know, I think is very serious, you know, risk, and it's not priced in, I would consider speculating on that again. But I don't see anything like that right now that's not priced in yet. You know, inflation fears and interest rates rising, I feel like that's being priced in right now, last month, this month, you know. But the theme is, you know, trying to recognize when the actual theme is changed, you know, the song of the market is changed. That's hard, you know, like, are we now really entering a longer term period, for example, of growth in tech stocks being out of favor, you know? Is that really happening right now? Like, is that kind of theme playing out before our eyes? You know, like, maybe it stopped for 2 days and then it comes back in a week or two, and we, you know, and it's just kind of a slow demise of the growth tech stocks for a quarter or a couple quarters in a row. And that's very possible, you know. But I don't know how much of that is priced in yet. I'm trying to figure that out, you know. And so I guess for 2022, I'm just trying to get better at recognizing those themes and you know, maybe there's ways to hedge by selling covered calls at local highs or, you know, things like that. So with the fund, you know, we're just trying to stick to our guns on the few stocks that we do focus on primarily, and keep investing them thoroughly and not over leverage ourselves where, you know, if there is a huge drop in the market, we're in really big trouble, which, you know, we're already pretty leveraged. You know, our job of our fund is to really take risks, and, you know, most of our investors know that, and that we're just doing the best we can to maximize returns. It's a very risky portion of their overall portfolio to invest with us and such. So, you know, that's sort of my aggressive investing strategy. On the personal side, you know, I just am holding mostly Tesla shares. You know, I feel like that's the safest bet. You know, I have a huge pot of, you know, that now that I don't have a job with an income, I got to have some kind of like safety net, right? And so I kind of have this huge safety net of just holding Tesla shares, and, you know, I've borrowed from it a significant amount to pay taxes and whatever. So I got to be a little bit careful there. Yeah, I mean, then my IRA account.
So did you pull margin to pay taxes then?
Yeah, I pulled some margin to pay taxes. I've sold some shares. I've pulled margin. Yeah, and we're living off of margin I pulled on it. You know, so over time, the margin has grown slowly but surely, even though I've sold a few shares here and there. Not much, just small amounts. But yeah, at some point, it would be nice to get to a place where I could just like sell like really deep out of the money covered calls to like live off of, instead of and have everything paid for in cash without margin, you know, but I'm just not there. I mean, what about you? How's your strategy changing in 2022? And are you borrowing against to live, or are you selling covered calls again, or what are you doing?
Yeah, I think for me, I'm so happy that I don't have like margin, you know, like I'm just I haven't had, well, actually this past year I did an investment, into a vehicle that, you know, has exposure to SpaceX. So that required some maneuvering where I did have to sell a little bit, but I did it over time. Like, I'm actually just very happy to hold Tesla shares and have no margin, and, yeah, whatever needs I have, I could just sell a little bit of Tesla here and there.
Do you have a play account, a play money account that you speculate with much?
Yeah. So I have an IRA, a Roth that I kind of just throw, you know, different names in and stuff. I did this, like this past few days, I've been thinking about the concept of margin, you know. I'm like, it's like, you know, what if I did borrow, let's say, 10% or, you know, something, to just hold Tesla stock and do a tight stop loss or something, you know? I don't know, because with options, the tricky part is, you could lose it all, you know, easier than you think if things turn, but with stock, it's a little bit, it's actually a lot, I think, less risky. I'm playing around with different ideas, but I don't know. I default to like, you know, no margin. Just, it just feels like so much like, I don't know, just better psychologically.
It does feel better. I've had, you know, I have a lot less margin proportionally than I used to. That's for sure. But if Tesla ever went down to like 500 or something again, I'd have to really be careful at that point. I'd have to like start figuring things out, maybe start acting on changing my margin or something, you know? So hopefully there's no massive correction, but you never know.
Yeah, definitely. What's besides Tesla? I know you're bullish on Roblox, what are some other names? I mean, you have Rocket Lab as another name. You guys have Lemonade. What other companies are you guys kind of looking at?
Yeah, those are our four names. Tesla's obviously our highest conviction name. And then, Roblox, Rocket Lab, and Lemonade are the other three names we kind of focus on that we talk about publicly. And that's, you know, we don't have any other stocks that are higher proportions of our fund than those, any of those four stocks. Those are like our four pillars at the current time. You know, we feel like we understand them pretty well because we've studied them very much. There's always more to learn, you know, we're always continuously trying to learn more. So, you know, if sometimes we explore ideas of other stocks, you know, growth tech stocks or even value stocks we look at sometimes. Matt's really good on that. And we've dabbled in a few other stocks from time to time. Some have been successful, some not. But for the most part, those four are sort of our, you know, I wouldn't call them breadwinners because they haven't really earned a lot of bread yet. Maybe Roblox to some degree, but in Rocket Lab, we got in, you know, before the SPAC merger, which is good. So it's still up even after all this, but not a lot, you know. And but we feel Lemonade is a very like binary outcome, very risky, but there's a huge binary outcome possibility where, you know, it goes down further or their things turn around for them and it looks like they're starting to grow and so forth. And their stock performs wildly well after that. So those are the two. So Lemonade and Rocket Lab both will take a long time to play out. Rocket Lab will take longer, I think. It's, you know, a space industry play similar to SpaceX, you know, but SpaceX isn't publicly traded. But the actual, for, you know, waiting for SpaceX revenues to be, you know, to be profitable could take many years, right? Same with Rocket Lab, right? So, so Rocket Lab could take a long time to play out and Lemonade could take a while, but Roblox we're feeling pretty good about. I think, you know, it's come down quite a bit and I still think they're growing, you know, very fast relative to what most people realize. I think, for example, this past holiday season, lots of kids got gift cards for Roblox and spent it like immediately. And so I'm looking forward to whatever that, whenever they announce the bookings for what December was, for example, I think, you know, that could surprise some people. That might not be until their earnings report, but, we'll see. Yeah. I mean, I really like the future of Roblox. It's going to be a while to, you know, really play out in terms of when their PE, you know, grows and such. But I think they just have this edge, and this kind of like, you know, first mover advantage that I don't see anyone else catching up to in that space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Roblox is definitely, I think, an interesting play, especially as it's come down a bit. They're still growing, you know, quite fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Curious, personal plans for 2022, anything you're doing, any place you're going or any changes?
Yeah, we are, I just talked to a friend who I interviewed on our YouTube channel, Dr. Wes Gray, who runs this firm, Alpha Architect, longtime friend of mine. He's at the opposite end of the spectrum in terms of investing. They do like quant investing, factor investing, they call it, and they focus a lot on value stocks. And he went over that philosophy in our chat, but he's been trying to get me to come to Puerto Rico. He just moved to Puerto Rico like last year. And so my wife and I are going to go out there in the spring for like a long weekend and check it out. I don't know if we'll move out there. But it's in the realm of possibilities, you know?
And
also Texas, you know, as I'm always on the table to come check out and consider, you know, the COVID stuff is, in my mind, is getting too crazy here in California. It's like, oh, everyone's got to wear masks again. Kids got to wear masks. Like, I went to brought my kids to the dentist to fill, like, spend a half hour filling all these COVID forms online. I'm like, just to get them for their dental checkup. And I feel like we did that last time we brought them there 6 months ago. I don't know. It's just out of control, you know, the bureaucracy around COVID in my mind in California. And, you know, this Omicron thing is just, numbers are creating massive panic headlines for everyone to kind of panic on and use excuses to implement more restrictions. And I just don't know if that'll end. I'm starting to wonder, like, is this just a movie going to keep repeating in California, at least? And I'm like, maybe it's time to get out of here. So yeah. We're seriously considering getting out. You were wise, I feel like, to get out. you know, what was that, a year and a half ago? A year ago, exactly?
A little over a year. So yeah.
I'm kind of regretting that I didn't just make a fast decision like you did then. Especially with my taxes this year. I'm paying California a boatload of taxes. So they're making money off me for sure. But that's fine. You know, it's a great state to live in terms of being outdoors and enjoying things. But there's a lot of options on the table personally. And from work related, we're actually trying to institute something new in our media, you know, channel, Good Soil Investment Management YouTube channel, is that we're gonna, you know, our fund, we give out half of our funds to charity. after we, or half of our fees net of expenses to charity. So the fourth quarter of last year, we finally did a little, had some profit where we generate some performance fees that'll be more than our net expenses. So half of that we're giving to charity. And so what we're doing is we'll be figuring out a way to give that out in a kind of a creative way. And Matt and I are going to put a little 3 to 5 minute video out on that soon. And we're excited to kind of do that. I'm really excited to get that part of our business going, you know, as much as I am to like grow the hedge fund itself. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's going to be really cool. What about you? What's your 2022 plans looking like? This channel, you're off to a great start. Did you make a New Year's resolution to be like, I'm going to pump out incredible content
every day? No. It's
what happened?
It's just like it just came where I'm like, you know, I think this delivery number is bigger than I think people realize, and so I just wanted to talk with people about it, just to get all the angles. And so I jotted down a bunch of names. I have a bunch of other people I'm hoping to get on as well. It might actually last the whole month. Just like,
awesome.
Yeah. Just like trying to get like, you know, just, combination of just, you know, just people who know their stuff, anyone, you know, but also some analysts and some maybe investors and other people to really, you know, get their view on stuff on Tesla. I'm thinking, personally, we're planning actually a super long RV trip, this summer, maybe 4 months. I don't know. We'll see.
We might do a long, motorhome trip ourselves. To go travel the country to the East Coast and see some family and
Be like
a month or so. Yeah. We're thinking about doing that. But go on. You did it last summer or 2 summers ago, right?
Yeah. So the problem is like when I do this RV travel, I can't really do videos much at all because it's like I have no space and it's just like crazy. But we're thinking of towing a car so that I could use that as like a makeshift studio. So in the evenings, I could just hang out there. Maybe when the kids go to sleep, I could, you know, hash out a video here and there. I need to shop for a car. Too bad, like Teslas, you can't flat tow them. You know? Yes,
that's sad. True. Hopefully, Starlink will be mobile by then, and you can bring it with you.
Yeah, that's what the hope is. Starlink, at least, and a car. But excited about that, and see if you know, headed back to California, visiting some people, and then going up to Seattle, and then to Colorado, and just spending like time in national parks along the way. Should be fun.
That's cool. I think traveling, you know, the country and eventually the world is like one of the greatest things to do, especially with our families, you know, so making time for that is a great thing.
And then I think besides investing, I mean, the giving side is starting to fascinate me more. I think just the kind of trying out kind of more of this public type of crowdsourcing of giving opportunities and, you know, sharing it. It just is tapping into something I think is pretty interesting. So I want to see what 2022 has in store for that as well.
No, you've definitely inspired me and I'm sure many other people with what you put together for that Afghanistan fund. What was it then? 460 something thousand? Was that what it was?
I think something around there. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. Hopefully that's going to, you know, that's really, hopefully, you know, like, that's just a sample of what's to come. Like with other people even following a similar lead, maybe with using technology and social media and that type of platform for, you know, things like, you know, feeding Afghanistan children, you know, or other parts of the world that are in great need. Hopefully it can be used in a similar manner to really raise capital and get it to those people quickly.
Definitely. Awesome, man. It's an interesting start to 2022 for sure. And I'm sure it's going to be a great year for
I hope so. I mean, the thing is, we always know Tesla is going to be, the business is going to rip, you know, it's going to be incredible. And the stock will eventually, you know, come in line with the business doing so much better. And, you know, but for all the other market, you know, for the macro market, there's a lot of uncertainty, and that means all the growth and tech stocks, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty in the near term. It's crazy. We might be having lots of stock therapy sessions.
I'm actually starting to I think last month I started to feel more of the jitteriness of the markets, and then I'm starting to get a little bit more on the optimistic side for this year. So we'll see what happens. I'm sure this is gonna be crazy though, because the Fed's gonna go through a lot of different announcements and, you know, changes. So we'll see.
Yeah.
All right. So. All right, Emmett. Take care.
All right, Dave.
We'll chat again soon.
Sounds good. All right.
Okay. Bye.